that picture of you and John Barrowman.
He's a pro at those photo things. Like, you know, you have all these plans where you're like, we're going to do this and we're going to do this. And the first thing he said was, okay, girls, cuddle close. And like, my brain just went empty. I was like, okay, John Barrowman.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi, my name is Casey, and Aragog is scarier than Voldemort and Bellatrix Lestrange combined, and I am an anomaly.
I'm Sue. I know what you did last summer, and I am an anomaly.
Guess what episode this is, you guys?
I'm guessing that it's another one where we talk about stuff but don't really reach any conclusions.
That is correct.
We're good at those. Today, that topic will be, why is horror appealing?
But which we are honestly wondering. Because I don't get it.
You don't like any horror?
I don't like a lot of horror, but we'll get to that.
I feel like I'm very echoey.
I don't hear anything.
Okay, fine. Yes, first we have some typical housekeeping dailies to do.
So last time when we were talking, I think you were preparing for Dragon Con, right?
I was, yes.
How did that go?
Dragon Con was awesome. I did my Matt Smith number of panels, which were a lot of fun. I have audio from, I think, 9 or 10 of them that Jen and I were actually talking. Rather than put everything in the feed, we are going to make a page on the Anomaly Podcast website and upload those panels there. And we might release one or two into the feed, but just so to not, you know, overrun it with Dragon Con stuff. Whatever someone is interested in, they can download.
What sort of panels did you cover?
Oh my goodness, Casey.
What? I'm just curious.
I was on Disney-fied sci-fi, which talked about, you know, classic Disney sci-fi films. I did a Dollhouse panel about contract and consent. And we did a Shakespeare panel for the Whedon Shakespeare. And I was on a Terry Pratchett panel, and I was on a Doctor Who panel. I don't know. I was on 11 panels.
You were drunk, weren't you?
I really wasn't because I did a stupid thing and registered for a 10K in the middle of Dragon Con. So Saturday morning, I had to run 6 miles. Oof. So I wasn't drinking that weekend because I had to run. So I might have been the only legally of age person at the convention who didn't consume any alcohol all weekend. Remind me never to do that again.
What?
Sign up for a race during Dragon Con.
Yeah, that does seem kind of silly.
Yeah.
But you were Wonder Woman.
I was. I did run as Wonder Woman.
That was pretty awesome.
And then I came back. Oh my goodness, what happened? Since then, I have run a 10-miler. I was down in Disney World for that. I came back, and the weekend after that was New York Comic Con. And there was a huge Doctor Who cosplay meetup, so that's awesome. The pictures aren't back yet, but when I get some, I'll probably post them on the Anomaly Facebook page. And I have been planning a Doctor Who 50th anniversary party.
That sounds like fun!
Yeah, it's crazy.
I've been prepping for Austin Comic Con. In fact, it's going to be close to a month ago now. Jen and I passed out flyers for the con at ACL, or the Austin City Limits Festival. And I've also been shopping for my cosplay for at least the 10th Doctor. I'm still hoping to be a Femme Sherlock as well, but Femme 10 is at the top of my list. I have my shoes. I just need to pick them up from somebody because I'm borrowing them. And I styled my hair and it looked pretty great.
That was an awesome picture.
Thank you. I put a picture of my hairdo up on Facebook and I got a lot of positive responses, even from people who don't watch Doctor Who. And I was inspired to do that because you and I have both been doing the 50 Days of Doctor Who meme,
yes,
meme on Tumblr. And one of the things was cosplay as your favorite doctor with what you have in your closet. So I decided to play. And it looked nice. And I had a birthday.
Yay, birthday.
It was my birthday. And I saw the Book of Mormon twice in a week. It was amazing. Best birthday gift ever.
It's a pretty good show.
It's a pretty fantastic show. And I guess I'm also preparing for NaNoWriMo, which is next Friday.
Which will probably be close to when this is released. So,
yeah.
November 1st, NaNoWriMo. Well, normally, right about now, we would be sharing some feedback we got for some prior episodes. However, we have so much, and we don't want to delay too much going into our main topic, that we are going to actually do that after our main topic. So stick around after that, because we have a little bit of discussion about Ghostbusters and about our superheroes episode.
So,
I did the fancy part.
You did do the fancy part.
Transition!
Transition! Should we just make that a transition? Should we ask Rick Moyer to make a parody of tradition?
Transition! 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 It's so silly, and yet it amuses me to no end. We might have to. I might have to send Rick Moyer an email.
Oh my gosh. We just found our new printing out the emails. So the topic is, why is horror so appealing? You know, I get psychological effects and whatever, but I still don't get it. I still don't understand why people sit themselves down to watch a scary movie or a scary TV show and then go to bed at night.
I never really thought of myself as a horror fan, because in my mind, when I think of horror, what I'm thinking of is like slasher movies and lots of blood and guts and like, I just... No. But psychological thrillers, I love. Like, my favorite movie for a long time, maybe not favorite movie, but definitely favorite, I guess, horror movie, was Silence of the Lambs. That would be my subgenre, I guess, would be the psychological thriller. And I think it's, for me, at least, that subgenre is the fascination with what weirdness can go on in someone's brain. As for wanting to be scared, that's not really my thing, and I think the only reason that I can handle The Walking Dead is because of the after show. Because that makes it not scary anymore, and you laugh at it, and like then I'm not afraid to go to bed.
Yeah, I have seen The Talking Dead. Talking Dead definitely makes it better.
Yeah.
Chris Hardwick makes everything better. And you know, I like some horror-based things, but the thing about what I like is that either it has something I'm already invested in to some extent with some sort of geekiness or whatever obsession like I have. Like, I really like gothic romances, and I also really like sci-fi. I like the idea of cloning and things like that. So I will probably edge towards watching those things, but with zombies, with killers and stuff, I need convincing. Like, the first time I saw Silence of the Lambs, it was edited on television, and it was still scary, but I was okay with watching it because it was a psychological thriller, which, again, I'm also interested in psychology. My older sister's a psych major. My husband is a psych major.
So how does, because I know you watched the television show Hannibal,
mm-hmm,
right? How does that compare with Silence of the Lambs? Is it along the same vein?
I think they go... Now, I haven't read the books, but I think the books sort of serve as a text because they create a world.
Okay.
Also, it's the performances of the actors. But it's also Brian Fuller, who created shows like Dead Like Me and Pushing Daisies. And he had some hand in the first season of Heroes. I really like his work, so I have, you know, if it's not Joss Whedon, I'm going to watch a Brian Fuller show.
I think, I mean, people who've listened to us are probably not surprised that we're looking at psychology and things that make us think. at least for you and me.
What's funny is that I have to watch Walking Dead after I read the spoilers for Walking Dead.
I have so much stuff I watch on Sunday night that I actually try not to watch it when it airs. I try and watch it on Saturday when it's light outside, even
That's
if that
smart.
Means watching it like 6 days later.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do the same thing with Hannibal. I would watch it first thing in the morning rather than wait at night because I don't feel comfortable watching scary shows at night. Here's an anecdote for you. Kevin was so sure that he could get me over my scary movie avoidance. So he said, okay, and this is early in our relationship. He said, okay, come over to my apartment. We're going to watch some scary movies that I have. We'll have a few snacks or whatever, and we'll watch a scary movie. And I said, okay. We watched Silent Hill, and it was storming and raining outside. And only I noticed, like, it was a loud storm, too. And for some strange reason, Kevin was so focused on the movie and so relaxed that he couldn't tell that I was tensing up and, like, looking around the room for things that could come at me. And he's like, hey, how are you doing so far? And I'm like, fine.
Oh.
And then I was just like, okay, I have to go home. I have school the next morning because I was still in college. And we go outside and he's just like, huh, it's raining.
Oh, no. Man, in college, I had a somewhat odd living situation. My school, located in like old-timey Boston, housed us in brownstones. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like a typical dorm. But several of us on a couple floors would get together whenever we could, at least once a month, and watch a movie. And one night, somebody puts on this movie called Session 9. And they're like, oh, this was filmed not too far from here. And it is freaking terrifying. It's about, like, an abandoned mental hospital, and I can't even, but I was, like, shaking, and we probably didn't start it till 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. That movie is terrifying.
Those are the scariest!
Yeah.
Shutter
Especially
Island.
When they kept telling me that it wasn't far from where I was sitting.
I know! I know! Which is why I feel uncomfortable when they say, oh, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is based on a true thing that happened in Texas. Don't say that.
Right.
Don't say these things.
Ugh, crazy.
But yeah, the mental hospital stuff is super creepy. Like, did you see the movie Shutter Island?
I don't think I did.
That was more psychological thriller sort of stuff rather than straight up horror. But that took place in a mental institution. And it was messed up.
Because you know, as soon as something takes place in a mental institution, it's not just like a normal one. There are going to be people who had tests done on them and were seriously disturbed and were probably possessed. And oh, no. But we've used the term psychological thriller a lot to this point.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There are other sub-genres of horror.
Yes. First of all, let's go ahead and get this out of the way. My husband told me that the gory movies are called gore porn.
Pretty much, yeah.
The movies like Saw, Hostel. I try to avoid those movies at all costs. Like, I might watch some of the classic horror movies, which we'll get to in a second, but the ones where it's outright blood everywhere.
Yeah.
I can't really do that. I still have to hide my eyes during parts of Inglourious Basterds because that is a bloody, bloody movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's found footage.
Shaky cam.
One of which, yeah, Shaky Cam. Paranormal Activity and the movie which kind of started this trend, which was The Blair Witch Project.
Yep. Or at least, if not started, it was the first really big one that I remember.
I remember seeing so many news stories about the Blair Witch Project and how people were fainting and coming out of the theater sick to their stomachs and saying that it was one of the most horrifying movie experiences they've ever had.
Anyway, there is the classic horror stuff. The Shining, Carrie, The Exorcist, and then, of course, George Romero comes along and basically creates the zombie genre.
Night of the Living Dead, Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead. All of the dead.
Except The Walking Dead.
And Shaun of the Dead. And Juan of the Dead.
So then we've got, speaking of Shaun of the Dead, the horror comedies, like Army of Darkness, Shaun of the Dead.
Evil Dead 2, technically.
Yeah.
Oh, Tucker and Dale versus Evil. That's another one.
And all of the scary movies.
Yep. All of the parody movies. Yeah.
Which are really, I would watch those instead of any of the horror movies just to get caught up, because they would, you know, tell me what happened but not be scary. And then you've got your slasher flicks, which sort of overlap with the gore, don't you think?
I think gore porn is a little more torture-y, whereas movies like Halloween, Scream, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, there's a lot of chasing and then a lot of slashing. Yeah. Does that make sense?
It does.
If there's a lot of blood along with a lot of torture, I think then it's gore porn. Like if the blood is going on forever and ever and ever. Like, there should not be this much blood. To quote Macbeth, who would have thought the man to have had so much blood in him?
Very nice.
Yeah. Lady Macbeth, what?
A horror play.
A horror play. One of the first ones. Well, Dr. Faustus, I think, is one of the first plays because the religious plays were very scary. They involved a lot of demons. Mm-hmm. Dr. Faustus involved, you know, if no one's familiar with the story, a man selling his soul to the devil so that he can have pretty much superpowers. In the end of the original play, he gets torn apart by demons.
Obviously, movies are a newer source of media, but the horror stories, ghost stories, and demon stories have been around forever. And one that, I guess, would it fall into the horror would be The Island of Dr. Moreau.
I think it would fall into horror.
Yeah.
I haven't read The Island of Dr. Moreau. I haven't seen the movie either. I wonder why.
But again, I would put it probably closer to the stuff I already know that I enjoy, which is the psychological, moral question sort of thing. But there are definitely people out there. There is a market for the gorier stuff that you and I aren't really fond of. So should we ask the actual topical question of why people like them?
Yeah, let's go ahead. And actually, I was about to discuss plays a little bit further because these plays that would feature ghosts and demons and devils and all this were serving as morality tales, basically saying if you don't do certain things this way, then you're going to go to hell or you're going to die a horrible death. And in a way, this trend is still continuing. You remember Scream. There are rules about the things you can do to survive any horror movie, one of which is don't have sex, one of which is don't say I'll be right back.
Don't split up.
Yes. I think it's a trend that's continuing that sort of teaches us what not to do. Also, if you're a fan of zombie movies like my husband, it teaches you how to prepare yourself. Like, he makes it a hobby to prepare for the zombie apocalypse. And sure, it's fun and games in our mind, but in a way, you truly are preparing for the end of days.
I mean, if you're prepared for zombies, you're prepared for pretty much anything.
Exactly. Again, there's also the science of it, which I guess we can go into now or later.
I was looked up a bunch of stuff.
You did look up a bunch of stuff.
I did look up a bunch of stuff and basically read a handful of articles that quoted a bunch of different psychologists about why people like horror movies. And it basically comes down to the idea that being scared sort of like heightens your adrenaline and your senses, but being scared while being safe makes coming down from that, I guess, hormonal high more enjoyable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's just I don't have the science language to make a ton of sense. So I'll just read straight out of a post on psychcentral.com, which we'll link to in the show notes, called Why Some People Love Horror Movies and Why Others Hate Them. And it says, according to Glenn Sparks, PhD, a professor and associate head of the Brian Lamb School of Communication at Purdue University, one reason for the appeal is how you feel after the movie. This is called the excitation transfer process. Sounds like the name of a Big Bang Theory episode. Sparks' research found that when people watch frightening films, their heart rate, blood pressure, and respiration increases. After the film is over, the psychological arousal lingers, Sparks said. We're just not aware of it. That means that any positive emotions you experience, like having fun with friends, are intensified.
Interesting.
So the entertainment is what you take away rather than the fear. And you know, there's several articles brought up the idea of the cuddle principle, which, you know, me being me just makes me roll my eyes, that people like them because it's manly for men to not be afraid, but it's okay for women to be scared. So they're great date movies because because it makes the couple cuddle, which, I mean, it's in so much, I feel like I have to mention it, but it, like I said, makes me roll my eyes. Well, there was another study in the same article. They cite this study, which they link to, although I don't have it in front of me, and say that males liked a horror movie more when they saw it with a female who was scared, and females liked the horror movie more when they saw it with a male who wasn't scared. So very much playing on heteronormative gender roles, I guess.
Yeah.
But okay, fine. It is definitely a stereotype, but that is something that kept being brought up. The excitation transfer theory is something that kept being brought up. And the idea of being able to be scared while knowing you're safe is a continuing theme. Sort of like roller coasters.
Which I also don't go on that much.
I mean, there were a couple other that I didn't come across as frequently as the two in the psychological article, I guess, but a few people brought up that fiction, stories and movies and TV are how we, quote, defang our monsters. And that works with violence, too, so that by experiencing monsters and violence and terror in a fictional setting, it helps you deal with things in the real world better.
That's true. Buffy did that. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything on Buffy was a metaphor of some sort. If you watched it when you were in high school or any sort of school, it kind of made life a little bit easier.
Do you have any more about why people like horror movies?
Because they're crazy. I'm trying to think of it in a way of the few horror things that I like. Why do I like them? And I guess the ones that I do like are kind of genre-based for the most part. They're not slasher stuff. I mean, I like psychological thrillers, of course. We've discussed that over and over again. But I also really like knowing these things are happening because of supernatural occurrences,
right,
or because of science fiction. For example, the first science fiction story to ever come out of anything is Frankenstein by Mary Shelley, because she examines what would happen if a scientist created a living being out of a compilation of corpses.
Right. I mean, the addition of, I guess, science fiction or fantasy element, whether, you know, supernatural or paranormal or whatever you want to call it, helps you distance yourself from it a little bit. At least for me, I can keep telling myself, oh, this isn't real. Whereas, you know, if it's just somebody is in the house and breaking down the door and murdering you, that could happen.
Exactly.
That's a real thing.
And I'm not trying to say anything, but a lot of the people who die in horror movies first are women. They're the first ones to go.
I really don't want to be getting up every 20 minutes to make sure my door is locked.
I know.
For the 100th time.
You know, even Shaun of the Dead, it's connected to another genre, which is comedy. Cabin in the Woods by Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard blends another genre in there. What specific horror movies, TV shows, and books or whatever do you like that's based in the horror genre? Or let's say, you know, make it a little bit easier, the supernatural genre.
Well, oh, I guess that takes out Silence of the Lambs, doesn't it? Because that's not really supernatural.
No. It can still be horror.
Okay.
It can still be horror. It's okay. I have Psycho on mine. But anyway, yeah, that's spoilery for my comment. You go ahead.
Well, I guess you could throw Ghostbusters in there.
Yes!
Definitely a fan of Ghostbusters. I enjoy The Walking Dead. I enjoy Haven, which I think sort of borders on the psychological. And in thinking about all of this, I have realized that I much prefer to read any horror fiction that I consume rather than watch or listen to it. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that is because I feel some sense of control over it.
Yeah.
Because whatever I'm seeing or whatever I'm imagining is all in my head. And if I'm done and I want to stop, I can just put it down and go away. You know, and Mira Grant's Newsflesh series, the zombie series, is fantastic. And, you know, I guess I've started to like zombies. I mean, I'm not as gung-ho about them as some other people, but between Newsflesh and The Walking Dead, I've become a fan. I don't know, I like dark and creepy more than horror. Does that fall into horror?
Yeah, dark and creepy kind of falls into horror.
You know what I loved? Were the episodes of The X-Files that sort of dipped their toe in the horror field.
Mm.
And my favorite was actually one, I think it's very early on, called Humbug, where they go to, like, the supernatural rundown circus. I think we've discussed in the past how, like, creepy circuses are awesome. At least for me, I think creepy circuses are awesome. I think that was on A Moment of Who.
Yeah, I think so.
And also the episode Home, which is the one with the inbreeding people who live in the field, and the mother's under the bed, and they, like, couldn't run it in reruns on network cable because it was too disturbing. Yeah, I guess that's where I fall. If it's disturbing rather than scary, like outright scary,
yeah,
then I'm down for it.
So, of course, I mentioned Shaun of the Dead. That's one of my favorite.
Oh, and Army of Darkness, obviously.
Army of Darkness is funny. This is my boomstick!
Evil Dead the Musical, by the way. Excellent.
Yeah, we have that on a CD. Kevin loves it.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. Like, I love Shaun of the Dead. I've discussed this before. It's one of my favorite movies ever. And Cabin in the Woods, I highly recommend for anybody who hasn't seen it yet. Drew Goddard actually wrote a few episodes from Buffy Season 7 and the movie Cloverfield, which is the shaky cam one. This movie is not shaky cam.
Oh, yeah. I guess we would put Buffy in the horror genre, too, huh? So, yeah. Buffy.
Buffy is one of my favorites. So is Angel, which is just a spinoff. And Hannibal. Of course, I love Hannibal.
You know, I keep forgetting somehow that werewolves and vampires tend to fall into horror.
Yeah, I know, right?
I don't know why, but that opens up the door, because I enjoy being human on sci-fi. There was a great, actually, zombie short series on BBC America that now I can't remember the name of. Crap. I'll look it up. You talk.
Well, the reason why I think supernatural horror doesn't get a lot of press is because, you know, we've romanticized vampires and werewolves to an exhaustive extent, which is kind of what we're doing with zombies now, too. And zombies still freak me out, but a lot of people are on the zombie train right now, and it's going to get to a point where people are tired of them. I think it all has to do with crazes, and it's sort of a cycle. So,
oh, yeah, definitely. The one I'm thinking of from the BBC and then BBC America, by the way, was called In the Flesh. Which was pretty cool. But I think it was canceled and it ends on a cliffhanger, so that was disappointing.
Yeah.
But, oh well.
Also, one of my other favorite movies is Psycho by Alfred Hitchcock.
Well, I mean, Hitchcock's just a league of his own. I stay up all night and watch Alfred Hitchcock Presents with my dad on Nick at Night.
Me too. I didn't understand anything that happened.
Oh, and then the Twilight Zone. Some of the Twilight Zone. Man.
Yeah. I avoided the Twilight Zone on purpose.
I miss anthology TV. This is a digression, but I want anthology TV back.
A part of me thinks that it might be a little expensive, especially if you want to get certain actors. I don't know.
Yeah, but I would think it would be less than... I mean, you could contract people to play sort of like summer stock.
Yeah.
You know, but then if somebody just wanted to do one story, you wouldn't have to sign them for a full contract. I don't know. I just... You know, how come The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits and Alfred Hitchcock are not on TV anymore? Because those are shows you can just sit down and watch, and you don't have to have seen the prior, like, 17 seasons.
Well, I can answer the Alfred Hitchcock one. It's because he's dead.
They have reruns.
That's anyway. I think it could happen, like, if it were, like, a lot of popular television has some sort of fan base now already, like Game of Thrones. So I think anthology TV, like, if it were a comic, if it were based on a comic series like Sandman, where the main cast always changed with the exception of the background characters, which are the characters that the entire comic series is technically about, right, then yeah, in a way anthology TV could work, but there needs to be like some sort of fan base ready to go. Mm-hmm. Also, there's some sort of anthology thing going on now in podcasting that I've heard. It's called Welcome to Night Vale.
Yeah, I Welcome to Night Vale, that fandom, at least to me, seemed to come out of nowhere, but they are hardcore. I have not checked this out yet. I mean, I can't even finish a kid's book.
Yeah, I downloaded the pilot, so I'm going to give it a go, and it's only 20 minutes long.
I would think the closest thing we right now have on TV to the old school kind of anthology show is American Horror Story.
Correct.
And I don't watch it, but I do know that every season has a different storyline with the same actors.
And I know the third season is on now. My little sister, who loves horror movies, loves, loves, loves American Horror Story.
Do you remember Are You Afraid of the Dark?
I do.
That was an anthology show, too.
It was scary.
It was scary.
And so was Goosebumps.
We're wimps.
We are. You know, I'm kind of with you. I feel more comfortable reading horror than I do horror and psychological thrillers, as opposed to watching them. Like, Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier is a psychological thriller, and it's one of my favorites ever. And Coraline by Neil Gaiman, Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. By the way, Nick Deer's Frankenstein, freaking amazing. It's the play version. And the National Theater production had Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller.
Wow.
And they switched
the roles. The two Sherlocks.
Yeah, they switched roles each night. One would be Dr. Frankenstein, one would be the creature.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think...
That's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, they're having encore thingies. Encore showings. And more importantly, we need to discuss the horror thing we both absolutely love. Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think Stephen Sondheim could take the thing I hate the most in the world and write music for it, and I would end up loving it. So...
So you think Stephen Sondheim could write a musical about Hitler?
Hey, the one musical about Hitler that I know is pretty great.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
But and again, Sweeney Todd.
No, go ahead.
Psychological thriller.
Yeah.
I think that's where we fall. At least me, I feel like I fall on the edges of the horror genre, but I'm not ready to like jump into the deep end of the pool.
The thing with Sweeney Todd that I love, I mainly love the stage version because more comedy is thrown in there, and you can't really see it in the Tim Burton film, unfortunately. Yeah. And I think Stephen Sondheim has said this in interviews before, but the scariest thing about Sweeney Todd, when they're singing about cutting up people and putting them into pies, they're both having so much fun laughing about it and making jokes about it, and the audience is laughing along with them. And after the show, you go, I encourage this! Because you're basically cheering on Sweeney Todd. Mm-hmm. Because in our mind's eye, because he's the main character, he's supposed to be the protagonist, but he's not.
I've been thinking a little bit about what defines horror, what is horror, and it reminded me of a thread on Reddit called What is the best horror story you can come up with in two sentences? And I saw some of these going around for a while, and they're really fascinating. Like, how much you can terrify someone with so few words. And right now, the top comment in this thread is posted by a user that I think's name is... Yeah, here it is. The username is Just Another Muffled Vo. Yeah, sorry. And his two-sentence horror story is, I begin tucking him into bed, and he tells me, Daddy, check for monsters under my bed. I look underneath for his amusement and see him, another him, under the bed, staring back at me, quivering and whispering, Daddy, there's somebody on my bed. The end. Like, that's terrifying.
That is scary.
And I want to know more.
Children are scary. Possessed children are scary.
We'll link to this thread in the show notes. If you have some time and want to go through it, I would highly, highly recommend it. But, you know, a lot of horror stuff, I see, at least the ones that have a good story to them or some kind of mystery, I see them and I'm thinking, I want to know what happens, but I don't want to actually see the movie because I'm afraid of it.
That's why the moviespoiler.com is one of the greatest inventions of our time.
Oh, there was a movie, The Others, that I kept seeing previews for, and I was like, that looks fascinating, but I cannot bring myself to watch the movie.
I know! Just seeing previews freaked me out. So I looked at spoilers,
more, right?
And I felt better. I looked at spoilers, and I felt better. That's one of the first spoilers I looked up on the moviespoiler.com.
I can't believe I never thought of that. That's a brilliant idea.
Also, if you want shorter versions of those spoilers, moviepooper.com.
Moviepooper. I think that's why I really enjoy the horror elements in the Discworld books. I bring Discworld so often. Is that the basic gist of how he handles them is that the monsters under the bed and the ghosts and the things that kids are afraid of are really there. And the kids can see them because they're children and they perceive the world as it is. But the adults around them perceive the world as they expect it to be. And it's just fascinating because there are a few adults sprinkled throughout the series, including Susan, who is Death's granddaughter. Mm-hmm. Who, even though an adult, can also see the things that children see and creates bonds with them because of that and physically fights the monsters under the bed and chases them away because she knows they're real and knows they're there. And it's just, by making it a tangible thing that you can fight also takes some of the fear away, I think.
What will absolutely guarantee your nightmares at night when it comes to anything horror-based or anything in general that scares you.
Oh,
like, I've talked about this earlier. I hate spiders. Chamber of Secrets, I can't watch again because of the spider that randomly jumps on the car and attacks Harry and Ron. That is not okay.
I don't know. Well, I mean, personally, I hate bugs. All bugs.
That's correct.
Are terrifying.
That is the correct answer.
But, I mean, I think my own brain can sometimes do worse than anything that I will willingly watch. Is there someone outside the window? Is there something on my fire escape? Oh my goodness, after a blizzard we had in February, I think, there was just inches of ice. And I heard this, like, rattling on my fire escape. And I was like, what is that? Is somebody out there? Is somebody trying to get in? You know, because, I mean, in New York, the fire escape, in the most part, goes to a bedroom window. So, terrifying, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get up, and I look out, and there's a freaking squirrel gnawing on the ice on my fire escape. But I was absolutely terrified and convinced that, like, a murderer was trying to break into my apartment. I think that is what scares me the most, is home invasion stories.
Yeah.
Because, like, invading the place where I'm supposed to feel the safest is possibly the most terrifying thing to me.
Yeah, me too. I don't like those. I also don't like hospitals. Like, I realize hospitals are for, you know, people getting better. But you have to admit, there are lots of horror movies. And, in fact, there was a show called Kingdom Hospital, which was a Stephen King project. Freaking scary. It's weird to say, it's like when something is that orderly, pun orderly,
Very nice.
Also, passing by an alleyway in general is just, at night, is terrifying.
Yeah, that's never good.
No. Also, zombies, not okay. I'm starting to get okay with Walking Dead zombies.
The thing I think about The Walking Dead that makes it okay for me is that, yes, there are zombies, but it's not the entire time. It's not a full hour of battling zombies or flesh being ripped up. And it's about, really, more about the drama of how these people are dealing with living in this world.
And some
people have complained that there aren't enough zombies in the zombie show. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm okay with it, too. I'm definitely okay with that. I guess we can go over comments now.
That sounds like a good idea.
That's probably a good idea.
Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the comments that we got from the Anomaly Facebook group.
Okay, what question was posed on Anomaly?
I don't remember. Here were the questions that were posted on the Anomaly Facebook group. What is it about the horror genre of film, TV, or literature that has you coming back for more? What horror movie or TV show or book is your favorite? And what would you recommend to people who are not fans of the genre? Jim, not Angela's Jim, we'll get to his comment in a second. But Jim says, for me, it centers on H.P. Lovecraft. It's all about the unknown and the idea that there is something that is ancient and we exist because it just hasn't woken up yet. For TV, I have to go with Buffy. Making the victim something that the monsters are afraid of really appeals to me. For books, it would be The Necronomicon by Lovecraft. It contains the whole Cthulhu mythos and is what most modern horror is based on. I know a lot of people. Sorry, this is going away from the comment. I know a lot of people who love Cthulhu. Mm-hmm. I still don't get Cthulhu.
It's the big trend, I feel like.
Is that the new trend? Are we going to have...
Yeah, kind of.
Are we going to have YA romance about Cthulhu?
What do you mean, going to?
Has it already happened?
Dude, you visit Tumblr.
I'm not visiting Tumblr enough. I'm going to have... go through some hashtags.
Or perhaps I'm visiting Tumblr too much. anyway.
Going back to Jim's comment, those would be my recommendations as well. Movie horror is too much slasher and not enough smart scary. Also, stretchy here, but Hellboy is amazing. I would recommend those movies and books.
Angela's Jim said, there's a ha-ha element. At least as far as movies go. You cease to watch horror movies and think of them as comedies, and then it becomes much lighter. Interesting. I wonder if that would work for any horror movie. I can't see it happening.
No.
we'll just trust you on that one, Jim.
Yeah. Angela says, same reason roller coasters are fun, terrifying at the same time. Horror on film is safe scary, which we've discussed. Hey! I can't, though, says Angela. I can't watch horror unless I have some detachment from it, which you said.
Yeah.
Angela says that after she saw Seven, she didn't sleep for 3 days. True story.
Mike says, for modern horror, have to talk about Stephen King. Yeah, some of the stuff is crap, but when Carrie was published and the movie came out, it was amazing. Salem's Lot was even scarier to read with a flashlight under the covers.
As someone who has failed at NaNoWriMo a few times now, the fact that Stephen King can write a book every 1 or 2 years is amazing.
Seems like every 1 or 2 months, though, doesn't it?
He writes so many books. And then I got to post sort of the same question on my Facebook. Pete responded, Cthulhu, don't say his name. You know who I mean. H-A-S-T. I don't know who you're talking about.
Voldemort?
Hastings? Are you about to spell out Hastings? Hasta luego? Drew is actually my brother-in-law.
Hi, Drew.
I don't know if he listens to the podcast. Still love him. I love horror movies, TV, and short stories. That's as far as it goes with literature. With horror films, I enjoy both high-budget and B-films. It really varies, but it has to be very story-driven and creepy for me to enjoy it. I can say I don't like pop-up horror, although it's fine to sprinkle some of that in my films. I do not like pop-up horror. Okay, this is Casey talking. Pop-up horror is not okay. Like when the giant spider just jumped out of nowhere in Chamber of Secrets, that was not okay. Okay, back to Drew.
Poor Casey.
Drew continues to say, TV shows have to be creepy and story-driven or they'd never make it, so that's just a given. American Horror Story is a good example. As far as subject matter goes, demon possessions and zombies are my two favorites. Separately, for people who don't like horror, I could suggest things like Stephen King's Night Watch short stories collection. Those are eerie and scary, but not going to disturb anyone to a fault. Movies and TV, I can't suggest much. Maybe just stick to zombies, since the intensity tends to be a lot lighter. I don't like zombies, Drew, my God! Don't you listen. Or spiders. Zombies and spiders. And hospitals. And mental hospitals. And birds. And
and everything else.
I fear everything. And children. Especially possessed children.
Creepy children of the corn children.
Sarah from Anomaly says, I only like smart, scary stuff, like The Haunting, The Woman in White, an independent movie. It's so good. Poltergeist are some of the ones that I like. They have to be really specific for me to enjoy them, as I don't like gore, and I want it to be a really interesting story with good characters. I don't enjoy just sitting around and watching a bunch of shallow people get killed, surprisingly enough. I like the Rose Red miniseries too, but that bordered on the too gross for me. I think people who don't like horror would still enjoy The Woman in White. It's not super scary, and it's an interesting story. Plus, it's set in the 50s or 60s, which really adds something. I really liked the Rose Red miniseries, now that I think about it. Hmm. Like, yeah, that...
I don't remember it. I must not have seen it.
Stephen King, again, it was set in a haunted mansion, and there were telepath and telekinetic people, and...
You know what movie was creepy that I did not expect to be creepy? Was Suddenly Last Summer.
Did not see that one.
It's a 1959 Katharine Hepburn movie. And like the son of a wealthy woman dies on vacation, and the girl saw it happen. Like he was almost, I think they sort of insinuate that he's like killed by the natives or something. But apparently what his cousin saw, who he was on vacation with, was so terrible that the woman wants to lobotomize her to cover up the truth of what happened. It's so weird and creepy.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a Tennessee Williams play, and Gore Vidal wrote the screenplay. And it's Elizabeth Taylor and Katharine Hepburn. And it is, I'm like, I want to watch this Katharine Hepburn movie I haven't seen because Katharine Hepburn is the most awesomest. And then I'm like slack-jawed. I don't know if I'm scared watching it, but I was certainly creeped out by that movie.
Tennessee Williams is brilliant, but he wrote some pretty messed up stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, just thinking about Streetcar Named Desire.
It's definitely messed up.
Yeah.
Anyway. I posed on my Facebook, do you like horror? If so, what kind and why? And most of my friends seem to ignore the why part of the question.
Meh.
But I'll go through them anyway. Victoria said, no pure slasher horror, but I do like suspense-style horror. I find slasher horror just boring, trivial, and it's all run and chase. However, horror movies with a story, a discovery, etc. are really great. For instance, the Omen movies I really love. They have complex characters and a great script. Mona said, I used to live for the gory slasher stuff, but as Victoria just posted, they're not worth it anymore. Crazy guy with an axe in the woods. Crazy guy with an axe in an abandoned psych hospital. It's been done. I like the suspense ones, too. The call is coming from inside the house type scare. Sinister is one of the latest that I've really enjoyed. Mona, I'm not going to the movies with you. Jesse said, I love horror movies, but not any of the torture porn stuff that's been so popular lately. It really is all about suspense, so however that's done is fine. For pure scariness, The Strangers was the freakiest thing I've seen in a while. But I do really like the 90s-style self-aware stuff, too. The Scream stories, The Faculty, and of course I love Cabin in the Woods. Funny and or meta plus horror is great. I also love religious horror, but only if it's done properly, which it frequently is not. Quick side note, The Faculty stars B.B. Newworth.
I do love B.B. Newworth.
I adore B.B. Newworth, but I have not seen The Faculty because I'm
afraid of it. Neither have I. Apparently there's a male character in there named Casey, and I remembered someone doing a monologue from that in one of my theater classes, and I went, not watching that.
I really want to, because I adore Bebe Neuwirth, but I just can't do it. Anyway, Kat says, I like the old school kind with the foam and the corn syrup. These new ones are so creepy I can't even watch the trailers. Bonus if the movie doubles as a comedy, be it on purpose like Shaun of the Dead or not, Plan 9 from Outer Space, or The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Amber says, the more complex a universe with more exposition, the better. That's why I like 13 Ghosts, even though it's not very good. More consistent systems of logic, please! Also, this is why I like sci-fi so much. I do also appreciate slasher movies, twist endings, and monster movies, though straight-up gore doesn't do much for me. And finally, Cindy said, nope, if the music even gets creepy, I turn the channel.
I think Cindy is the most sensible one.
Come to think of it, Amber might have been there when we watched Session 9.
And I remembered posting something on your wall that's called A Sensible Horror Movie?
Yes.
Or something like it?
That is great. That would definitely be you and me in a horror movie.
Yes.
So go to the show notes to see that.
It is a little NSFW, but it is funny. But yeah, I didn't really think about the B-movies because those don't really scare me. Even though Sharknado was like the crazy sci-fi B movie that everybody just fell in love with over the past month.
It was a perfect storm of, or a perfect Sharknado of.
You didn't even do that on purpose.
I kept doing that at Dragon Con too. I said that Sharknado set off a media Sharknado a lot. But it hit at the right time. Like, it had the crazy name, and there wasn't a lot of stuff going on in the news, and people were like, sci-fi, Sharknado, for realsies, and it just kind of took off.
But a couple of years ago, we talked about Little Shop of Horrors, and I think even Wolf Alon is going to talk about that, too. You know, I assume one of us is going to be sending a comment. About a giant plant who eats people.
Which is awesome.
It's amazingly awesome. And I think if things had more puppets in them, I'd be more comfortable with seeing the movie. And it also makes me think of Ed Wood, the movie by Tim Burton.
Which is such a fantastic movie.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good, like, you guys.
The gun safety in Plan 9. There's this scene where the guy is like, you go over there, and he's just pointing all these places, swinging his gun around, and he like points it at himself, and he's like, and I'll go over there, and then he like scratches his head with it. It's hilarious.
Transition.
So we don't have anything else to say about horror, right?
God, no.
My final thought on horror is that I guess I get it for some people because I like roller coasters, but the thrill or the adrenaline high that I get, I do not want to get from scary movies. And ghosts are scary. So, Casey, final thoughts?
I'm never leaving my home again.
Okay, sounds good. So we do have some... We do have some comments that from previous episodes of Anomaly, and the first is from Mike about our Ghostbusters episode, last year's Halloween episode that came out in August.
You're welcome.
All right. So our comment, Mike actually posted this as a comment on the show notes for Ghostbusters. So here goes. I haven't seen this movie in forever. I should really go back and watch it. Still enjoyed your discussion of it, though. I have to confess, though, my fondest memory of this film, I was 12 when it came out, was that song. I even wrote a parody of it called Roach Busters. We lived in San Antonio, Texas, and cockroaches were a real problem. Mercifully, the lyrics have not survived, but I do remember finding the idea of an invisible roach sleeping in your bed amusing and disgusting. Please, that is not okay, Mike.
Nope.
I still put the Ray Parker song on my Halloween MP3 playlist every year. How did it not win Best Song? The Woman in Red, I mean, okay, but come on, Ghostbusters. I did also watch the real Ghostbusters cartoon as a kid. Huzzah for Slimer! This property seems more than ripe for a reboot/remake, if Hollywood will insist on doing such things. Is there such a project in the works? I know that a new comic book was recently launched. to break from the comic very quickly. There have been rumors of a third movie for a long time, and there have been rumors of a remake for a long time. But as far as I know, there is nothing official planned. Is that
correct?
Right?
Yeah, that's right. Dan Aykroyd and I think Harold Ramis they're working on a script, and it's been ongoing. And then Bill Murray is saying he doesn't know if he'd do it again. He could do it again, but he doesn't really know if he'd do it again. Everything is just up in the air.
Right. Okay, back to the comment. Mike goes on to say, I agree. Bring in a few women Ghostbusters. Non-sexy Halloween costume variety on a new team. Would you count Star Trek IV as a sci-fi comedy, even though it's also an installment in the existing franchise, and I guess ultimately takes itself too seriously to be a comedy? Enchanted might also be considered a fantasy comedy, although it satirizes common fairy tale tropes, of course. In animation, what about Mastermind? I suppose it's a spoof on Superman and his ilk, but it's also a bit more than that. I think part of the problem with doing sci-fi comedy is that comedy hinges upon reversals or subversions of normal expectations. And when you're in sci-fi, normal is usually immediately way up for grabs. On TV, Futurama would qualify solidly as sci-fi comedy. Also Red Dwarf, from what I'm given to understand. I've not watched it myself. Thanks again for the fun episode. Star Trek IV is pretty hilarious. I mean, nuclear vessels. Whenever my office computer takes a long time to boot up, I pick up the mouse and I say, hello, computer. And nobody knows what I'm talking about. But that's okay. So, thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, Enchanted, definitely fantasy comedy, although parody, certainly. Back to the Future has some comedy elements, although it's not its main goal, yeah. I guess. And definitely, I'm sure we mentioned it. We must have. Galaxy Quest.
And
Roger
Hitchhiker's
Rabbit.
Guide.
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some out there, but it's certainly not a very full genre, you know.
Yeah.
I want more of it.
Me too. Sometimes I just want to laugh at something. Is that so? That's so bad.
That's not so bad. So then we also have two comments on our superheroes episode. The first one is from Data Logan, and it is an audio comment.
Direct from the database. It's Data Logan's data log.
One is my name. The other is not.
10 September 2013. I really enjoyed your recent podcast talking about superheroes. It got me thinking about a number of things. And I wanted to share a few random thoughts, if you'll indulge me. I don't think the amount of heroism that a person has is directly related to the amount of superpowers that they have, or even powers or ability. In fact, it may be in some ways inversely related. You know, people who have very little power, and yet are willing to go fight for what they believe in, are probably more of a hero. I think in a world where you could have superpowers, or if you do a mental exercise assuming that you could pick them up, it just makes you more likely to do things that are positive or negative, you know, if you're going to be a villain. It just makes you more likely to do things because it's easier for you to do them, and people tend to do things that are easy, or maybe put in a little nicer way. You have less restrictions between who you are and what you want to do. So you might be more inclined to do things if you had more power, more ability. Certainly people who have more money or people that have other significant powers that are less than superpowers. You know, people who are really good at public speaking, people who are really good at math, you know, those kind of things. They'll probably be more likely to go out and do something with that ability. I think that superpowers come in three different types, or even powers in general come in three different types. I think abilities can be lumped into three different categories. And then this would also apply to superpowers, if you have pick out certain superpowers. Some superpowers just give you the ability to defend yourself, or hide, or run away faster from dangers. It's just something that allows you to be less concerned about the world, or the villains in the world attacking you, because you have the ability to withstand their attacks, or run away, or become invisible, or fly away, you know, those kind of things that just to help you avoid danger, which, again, might make you more inclined to do something for good, because you know that you'd be less likely to get injured. And then there's the abilities that allow you to fight back, to, you know, defeat enemies more easily, like having adamantium claws or having some strength or having heat ray vision, those kind of things that would allow you to defeat an enemy, I think both of those categories of powers, and especially the second category, are only really helpful if you have enemies. You know, if you have somebody to fight against or run away from. Now, certainly, I'm guessing there's no shortage of enemies in the world. You know, no shortage of people that need to be ran away from, or people that we need to defeat, people that we need to imprison, you know, for doing bad things. But sometimes it's really difficult to tell who's bad and who's good, because, truthfully, everybody's a little bit of both, right? So I think in a lot of situations, you just get to the point where you're like, well, I have the ability to fight or defend myself or defend others, but I don't know what to do with that ability because I don't know who I should be fighting or who I should be defending. You know, I really see that in Wolverine. I mean, Wolverine is such a popular character, and yet, in so many stories, I'm like, what does he really do? I mean, he has to be, the writers have to throw him into situations where the enemy is clear, or he's told who the enemy is, so that he can use his abilities. Because all he really has is the ability to defend himself from attacks, and then to attack back. It doesn't really help him figure out the situation. He only has his innate intelligence and knowledge to do that. This really gets into the third type of power, the type of power that allows you to know what's going on, or to figure out people, or to figure out things, or to figure out the universe, to be able to understand mechanical devices, or be able to understand like biological interactions, like medical knowledge, or something like that. I guess what I'm really saying here is a bit of a cliche. The most important power is knowledge. If all you had was a superpower that allowed you to be able to telepathically understand what people's motivations are, I mean, that's a pretty impressive power, because you'd be able to more quickly insert yourself in a situation, figure out what people's motivations are, what they're doing, and then help them with the situation, or hinder them if you're a supervillain. You know, you have much more influence over the situation if you have the knowledge of where other people are coming from. Or in a medical standpoint, if you were trying to help a bunch of people who are dying of a disease, you know, I mean, being super strong or having heat ray vision is not going to help you with that. But if you had this innate ability to understand diseases and create vaccines for them, you know, and then of course in a super-powered sense, you could just make this instinctual where you don't even have to think about it. You could just come in and touch somebody and heal them. So maybe you don't really perceive the knowledge, but the knowledge is within your body and it just happens automatically. I think that's still a version of this third type of power where you understand the world and you have some ability to enact change on the world that's meaningful and not just I can fight or I can run away kind of thing. So whenever I think about what kind of power that I would want if I had a superpower, I tend to go right to that third source. I want, number one, I would want the ability to heal myself. You know, to keep myself physically fit without having to work at it. You know, an automatic diet, an automatic bodybuilding or whatever. You know, to have this control, instinctual, like I don't even have to think about it. I could just, you know, just am young. Your basic longevity superpower, or maybe with the add-on super ability of being really strong or indestructible, or have an amazing regenerative capability, again, like Wolverine. And I just have to admit that to myself as a person, because it is scary going out in the world and doing things. You want to know that you're going to be safe, and that you're going to be up to the challenge, and part of that challenge is physical. But then as I think more about the superpowers that I would have, it very quickly expands from just my ability to heal my own body to the ability to heal other people's bodies, to be able to touch and just instinctually like cure diseases or extend people's lives. That seems like the most obvious positive way to influence the world is to help eliminate disease or heal injuries. So going a step further into the question that you guys asked on your podcast, yes, I would use whatever abilities I have for good. I mean, that's what I do with the abilities that I have now. You know, my existing innate intelligence. And I wouldn't be secretive about it. I wouldn't have a secret identity. I think it's pretty hard to have a secret identity in this day and age with the technology and communications being what they are. I don't think it would be too difficult to expand the current laws to include people with superpowers. I mean, we already have the basic concept of the Good Samaritan Law, where anybody can come to the aid of another person. And even without direct permission to come to the aid, you have assumed permission to come to somebody's aid. If a reasonable person in society, seeing the situation, would have interpreted that person needed help. You know, current laws protect you from that. Now, the law, interestingly enough, it does state the exact opposite as well. I mean, if you come onto a situation, you see a bank robbery in progress or whatever, you are allowed to not help. I mean, you're allowed to turn away, you're allowed to flee, you do not have to come to the aid of another person who's in danger. But if you choose to take action, if you choose to involve yourself in the situation, then you are liable for your actions in that situation. So again, I think the existing law is pretty clear about that. If, for instance, there was a supervillain doing some damage in the city, and you chose to come and try and interact with the supervillain to stop him, most of the damage would clearly be caused by the supervillain, who would be liable for that damage. You would only be liable for the damage that you directly cause by your actions. So I think as long as you come in with the mindset that you're going to try and stop the bad guy and try and stop him from hurting people, and you know, minimize the collateral damage, then I think you're pretty good there. The problem may come that some people might misinterpret your actions, and they might, of course, sue you. So, yeah, you could end up in jail trying to defend your actions, which is another reason why it would be pretty difficult to keep a secret identity. I also think the concept of superhero insurance that you talked about is also already something that exists today. I mean, people have liability insurance. You can get umbrella liability insurance policies for millions of dollars. I think the problem might become, you know, if you were known as a person who has a particular affinity for attracting villains and damage, then you might have a hard time finding an insurance company that's willing to back you, and you might end up not having insurance. So again, that's probably why I would want to stay the kind of superhero or hero with a superpower that was more low-key. I'm not fighting villains, I'm just sort of helping people with diseases and injuries and maybe helping people understand each other and get along better. Okay, then. Thanks for listening to my ramblings. Data out.
Do you want to read the one from Carl?
Yes, we have an email from Carl. Carl says, Sue/Casey, thanks for making my Friday afternoon brighter with the debate about superheroes. I liked the premiere of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week, which was in September, and I hope they mind this territory of what it means to the rest of humanity that there are superheroes out there. Could make for some really great viewing. I was thinking about, would you want superpowers and the ability to help people in this manner? I am a graphic designer and have the ability to create brochures, graphics, etc., that many people do not have the inclination or software to do. I really enjoy doing pro bono projects for worthy causes, but sometimes the amount of requests and timing is very inconvenient. Even for free donated services, people can be pretty demanding, and it can be as frustrating as it is rewarding. I still continue to do them, but many times the joy is taken out of the process. Superpowers heighten everything, and I think you would quickly become overwhelmed with knowing that even though you are helping, you cannot meet all the needs that are out there. So, if I did get the power to cure disease or build skyscrapers, I would also need the inhuman ability to be super patient as well. Thanks for a great podcast, Carl.
This superhero debate is still so interesting to me, and something that Data said that actually stuck with me. He said, you know, I use the abilities that I have already to do good things. So if I had superhero abilities, I feel like I would use those to do good things as well. And it's just like, that is a very interesting course of logic. And then I'm thinking, yeah, that sounds right and noble and wonderful. And then right at the beginning from Carl, we get you would probably be pretty overwhelmed. Like, yeah, yeah, that's true, too. Like, there's so much that goes into it, you know? I know we say it all the time. We really do love your comments, and we love the interaction. And thank you all for telling us that we brightened your day, because that makes us feel good.
That brightens our day.
And don't you want to make us feel good? You know you
do. I want to feel good.
I think we're set for this episode. Coming up in November, one of the biggest things on every geek's calendar is the 50th anniversary special for Doctor Who.
Yay! Kermit flail, yay!
So there will definitely be a moment of Who in November. We are hoping to be able to get Mr. Meddings on the podcast with us. It's just going to be a scheduling thing. We'll see what we can do. And hopefully we'll have that out as soon after the air date as we can. As for the regular Anomaly Supplemental episode, if you can call any of this business regular, it will be a series Casey and I both love, obviously, called Pushing Daisies.
It aired on ABC in 2007, and it had Lee Pace, who is currently playing Thranduil in the Hobbit movies, Broadway vet Kristen Chenoweth, and it has the voice of Jim Dale, the reader for the audiobooks for Harry Potter.
And it's just beautiful.
It's also a Brian Fuller series, and as I've mentioned before throughout this episode, he also is the showrunner for Hannibal, the TV series. So check both of those out.
Yeah, it ran for
two seasons.
It's not a super long series, but it is a super rewarding series. It is a really, really super fun show. If you have not seen it, we encourage you to watch it. Especially if you don't want to be spoiled, you should watch it before the end of November.
I guess we can put a spoiler warning on that one.
Fine. And then looking a little bit farther ahead in December, we will be talking about The Nightmare Before Christmas, the Tim Burton movie that Casey can actually stand.
Because he wrote the story, he didn't direct it.
More about that in December.
In the meantime, if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, send them to moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That is girlygeeks@gmail.com. That is the Anomaly Supplemental email. It is very different from the Anomaly Podcast one, which does not have a more in it.
Yeah, it's four letters different.
It's four letters different.
But if you send it to Jen and Angela, they can get it to us. It's not like yes. We never talk to them.
Because they love us.
You can also get us on Facebook or Twitter or Carrier Pigeon or
Carrier Anomaly Pigeon?
Con.
Con!
Speaking of cons, just a reminder, although it's been all over the Facebook, Casey, Jen, and Angela will be at Austin Comic Con.
I'm going to be the 10th Doctor! Whee!
Yay! So if you are in the Austin area and are attending Austin Comic Con, stop by and say hello to them. I will not be there, but I've attended two cons already this year, and I need to sleep. So...
Which is what I won't be doing for 3 days.
Exactly. Have fun.
Especially since I have to watch the 50th anniversary episode that weekend. No right. sleep. All the coffee.
And speaking of sending us notes, if you are watching the Doctor Who 50th anniversary and you want to send us a note or an audio clip or something about with your initial reaction immediately after you watch the show, you want to turn on that phone and create a voice memo and send it to us, we would love that. So let us know what you think of the 50th anniversary special, and we will put everything we can into that Moment of Who episode.
In the meantime, visit the revamped Anomaly Podcast website. If you would like to make a donation, you may through PayPal. You can visit our store. Make sure you check out our staff bios for information about everyone on the Anomaly staff and for photos and for previous episodes in the archive.
Wow. Jen has recently revamped the website, and it really does look fantastic. So yay, Jen. And there are more improvements are coming. From what I hear, there are going to eventually be cosplay photo galleries, and we're going to import the blog and basically make it one-stop shop for your anomalous needs. And maybe we'll actually write some more stuff on the blog, too.
Things have been crazy, you guys.
And yet here we are on a Friday night recording a podcast for you.
You're welcome.
I think we're done. Right down to
the All right. Ounce. This is Casey.
This is Sue.
And you've been listening to Anomaly Supplemental.
Even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced, perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y Podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's MarianCall. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
The world is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end.
If there were more horror comedy, I'd probably watch more horror. Horror. Horror? We say horror differently.
Horror.
Horror. They took our germs.
They took our nerves. If you say it enough, it won't mean anything anymore.
That does not apply to Benedict Cumberbatch.
You've got your slasher fix. Slasher flicks. Which sort of overlap with the gore, don't you think?
It's hard to say because...
The slasher fix or something different. Oops.
I think the difference between gore porn and slasher fix is...
I did it.
Outtakes reel is going to be great.